Summer's hotter weather is finally here, but don't let hair loss also make you sweat. Regrow hair with help from Hims. They provide access to personalized treatment so you can see thicker, fuller hair in just 3 to 6 months. Get started from the comfort of home. Fill out an intake form and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary. Based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Granger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Granger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRANGER, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
You've walked this path many times before. It's a chance to think, especially about your future. How will you turn your retirement dreams into reality? Will you have enough gold for your golden years? Your choices for building funds for retirement can be complicated. Fortunately, you have a friend in the community who can help you make the right decisions. That's your Modern Woodmen agent. Your agent is a skilled professional who will listen to your needs and desires and then work with you to create a plan that uses the right financial products to achieve your retirement goals. Build a lasting professional relationship with a trusted financial advisor.
Hi, this is Thomas Chandler, your local Modern Woodmen representative. Give me a call today at 662-296-0186. Let's make a difference together. Hotty toddy and go Rebs.
Get in touch with your agent today. Modern Woodmen of America, touching lives, securing futures.
You're listening to Talk of Champions, an Ole Miss Spirit podcast with Ben Garrett. It's up.
This is Talk of Champions. I'm Ben Garrett at Spirit Ben on Twitter, and the guest co-host chair is Bennett Hipp at Bennett Hipp. Today's guest is Kentrell Lockett, former Ole Miss defensive end for the 40-yard dash, brought to you by Impact by Ironwood. Bennett, what's going on, man?
I'm hanging in there, Benjamin. How are you?
I'm with you. We're recording this early, and we're recording on a Wednesday. You might know what's going on right now as we record. The Braves fell behind 10-0 to the Cardinals. 10-0 in the first inning. I said when they lost game four, it was over. We all knew how this game was going to go, but 10-0, I'll be honest with you. I'm in mourning, not because the Braves season is over. I am in mourning because I feel like sports are never going to go well for me, and I just want to be done with it. I feel like my sports life is officially over. All my teams always shit the bed when it matters.
Well, I was talking about this morning. This was obviously before the Braves game, but I was talking about this morning with some buddies over text, and we were saying the Braves game tonight and all that, and just baseball in general. If you're a college football fan, that's 12 Saturdays a year. And obviously you pay attention more than that, but just for games, it's 12 Saturdays a year, plus a bowl game maybe if you're lucky. NFL, 16 Sundays a year, plus playoffs if you're lucky. It sucks when your football team loses. Trust me, I'm a Panthers fan. I lived through the Jimmy Clausen era and them losing every Sunday, basically. But baseball is different. It's 162 games. You basically, if you're a committed Major League Baseball fan, you commit half of your year. And basically every night, your summer, and basically from March to September, every Tuesday night, you're turning on a baseball game and at least paying a somewhat level of attention to it. So it's just different. You lose a football game, yeah, it sucks. But your baseball season ends in such a way, you've committed 6 months of your year to it, and it just hurts more for whatever reason, just because of the time commitment and investment that it takes to be a baseball fan as opposed to college football fan or a pro football fan or whatever.
I will not bore you with my anger, with my disgust. I'll leave. My final thought is this. The Cowboys have not made it to the NFC Championship game in over 20 years. The Braves have not won an elimination series to advance in the playoffs, an elimination game to advance in the playoffs, in 18 years. And I cover Ole Miss for a living. It's tough being a sports fan for Ben Garrett. This is Talk of Champions. Like I mentioned, Kentrell Lockett's coming up for the 40-yard dash because Ole Miss and Missouri play this weekend in Columbia. The last time Ole Miss went to Missouri, lost in 2006, 34-7. Talk a little bit about that game as well as Brent Schaefer, some other things. You know how me and 40 go. Most of the time, we get to talking about something and then veer off in many different directions. So that's expectedly how this edition of the 40-yard dash is going to go. We're going to really get rolling here in a second. But first, let me tell you about my bookie. I don't know about you guys, but for me, a game is 10 times more exciting when I'm putting my money on it. Sometimes I have a gut feeling about a matchup, and sometimes I'm just betting on my team because they're my team. Regardless, whether you've been betting for years or you're ready to bet for the first time, MyBookie is your best bet this season. With pro football, college football, and the MLB playoffs in full swing, and both hockey and basketball around the corner, now is the time to get off the sidelines and get in on the action. If you're going to bet this season, do the smart thing. Go to mybookie.ag because no one gives you more ways to win. If you really want to support your team this season, don't just sit on the sidelines. Get in the game. Mybookie.ag. And if you join right now, MyBookie will double your first deposit. And all you got to do is use the promo code TOC, Talk of Champions, TOC. And when you do, you'll activate the offer. That's promo code TOC to double your cash. Visit mybookie.ag today. You play, you win, and you get paid. First off, some news on Wednesday came down. It's official. Michael Thompson is leaving to join Ross Bjork at Texas A&M. He's gone. So now when you look at all the major players that were involved with Ole Miss's NCAA investigative case, it's empty. It's done. And now you're looking at complete new leadership across the board. Your thoughts now that Michael Thompson has officially left?
Congrats to him. That's a good gig. I know he's over there, going to be over there with Ross, and that's a fun time to be at A&M with Jimbo Fisher over there, the football program going well, Buzz Williams doing basketball. They're in pretty good shape, and that'll be fun for Michael. Just a couple of kind of divergent thoughts were my initial ones. I think one is everyone's thought may vary, but for me, people that I talked to that knew Michael or interacted with him said he was always super nice guy, and so happy for him. On the other hand, it's hard to know his exact role in some stuff, but just from a relationship standpoint and a fan base standpoint, it seemed like there had been that kind of relationship had reached the end of the line and people were ready for him to move on or do something different. So I think it's good for both parties. He'll do well at A&M with Ross, and I think Ole Miss fans, rightly, wrongly, whatever, are ready to have someone else in that role and doing those kind of things. So that was my first kind of initial thought when I saw the news come across Twitter.
It's well said. Michael Thompson's a good dude. I was friends with him. We had many a candid conversation. Didn't agree on a lot of things, but he handled himself as well as he could. Still, Ole Miss, I think, across the board, I think Michael would even acknowledge this, needed to reset its complete leadership, and Michael was included in that. And Michael's sure. Now gone. You've got a new chancellor, for better or worse. It's Glenn Boyce. AD's going to be new. I don't think he's going to get the job. John Hartwell could be in this AD search. Danny White could be involved in this AD search. There are a number of different candidates. I think Charlie Hussey would be the leading guy if he was interested in it. But he's number two right now at the SEC office, in line to replace Greg Sankey whenever Sankey leaves. So it's interesting. It's a time of transition for Ole Miss. A couple of years too late, I think many people would have expected these type of changes, wholesale changes, years ago. Ultimately, though, what happened was what I think many expected to happen, and that's everybody's gone. Everybody's gone. You usually don't see leadership survive what Ole Miss just went through.
You don't, and I think that was a lot of the frustration for Ole Miss fans for a while, is that people just really stayed in place for the most part. Ross obviously left and had the chancellor change and that kind of stuff, but for the most part, I think it was, and that's also been what has kind of affecting Matt Luke as well, is that fairly or not, and I think it's pretty unfair, but when Hugh Freeze was, when that went down and Matt became the interim, then he got the head job. The fact that he was a member of that Hugh Freeze staff, the one that was in place when all of this stuff went down with the NCAA, that association was toxic and unhealthy and was really insurmountable for a good bit of the fan base, I think, at least a vocal minority of the fan base. I think Matt's slowly starting to work and kind of chip away at that. But everywhere else in the administration, there's been a lot of calls for change and a lot of just need a clean break and a refresh and need a little bit more than just a new paint job. You got to go in there and kind of tear out some stuff and kind of rebuild. And it seems like that's going to happen. And I know that the chancellor search didn't go down the way most people wanted it to, but you've got new people in charge, and with Ross leaving and now Michael Thompson leaving, it's late, but there's a clean break now and a clear path to kind of starting over with new people in place and giving Ole Miss fans some new people in charge. And I think that was needed. Now you just kind of make those hires and go from there. But I think it definitely was needed.
I'm going to preface what I'm about to say with Matt Luke, I think, has got this team playing at a level that I didn't think it would be playing at this point. The wins and losses don't reflect that, but he is putting a team together that I think is more in his image. At the end of the day, what you've seen with all of the leadership being cleaned out is now Matt Luke is on notice. Not that he wasn't already. He was already on notice already. But Michael was the last remaining remnant of everything else. And I don't think Michael Thompson's departure in any way affects Matt Luke. That's not what I'm saying. I'm simply saying now that everything is cleared out, what's the last remaining bridge to all that other negative stuff? It's Matt Luke. He's now going to have to deal with leadership coming in with a complete clean slate to where, do I think he's getting next year? Yes, regardless of what happens. But it's not a guarantee. And the minute things turn sour, Matt Luke is next up. There's no one else left. There are no excuses anymore. Now it's everybody operating normally. Go win games. Right now, Ole Miss is 3-3. If Matt Luke gets to a bowl, he deserves every bit of credit he could possibly get. Honest to God, he deserves all the credit in the world. It's going to be a tough hill to climb. They're, I think, 11-point dogs against Missouri this weekend. It's going to be hard to get to 6 wins. But if he does get there, deserves a ton of credit, all the credit in the world. If he doesn't, he goes into next year. If he doesn't know it already, you're coaching for your job. That's what you'll be doing next year.
Yeah, and it's such a tough thing. You know, it seems like he's really stabilized things just from a program standpoint. They've been down, obviously, but you know, those big commuter ships, they take a whole lot of time to kind of turn around in the water, and that's what this Ole Miss football program is. And they're not all the way turned around, but they're in the process of kind of reversing course right there. I think the tough thing for Matt is, let's say he goes to a bowl game this year. Let's say they get to 6-6. There's still going to be some pressure on him next year. And you look at the start of the season next year, those first 5 games, you have Baylor and Houston, you have Southeast Missouri, you have Auburn and Oxford, you have at LSU, and then you have Alabama in Oxford. You have those first 5 games. I mean, at best, you're 2-3, probably a realistic world, you're 1-4. If this becomes a thing where he has to get off to a hot start next year and it's in question, the schedule just doesn't really allow for it. Now, the back end of the schedule is kind of manageable, but those first 5 games, if this thing is 50-50 either way, the schedule becomes something kind of insurmountable for Matt to overcome. So I just don't know if that kind of patience is in the cards. It should be. I just don't know that it is, and that's kind of unfortunate. They've really found an identity. I don't know what the ceiling is on an Ole Miss Matt Luke program, but I'd like to find out. I just don't know that it's possible at this point.
I agree with you. I don't know what the ceiling for Matt Luke is either, but I do know he has this team playing hard. You know what their identity is, finally, in 2.5 seasons as Matt Luke being the head coach. But now it's about putting up wins. And next year, regardless of what happens the rest of the way, next year you have the talent base offensively and defensively to potentially contend for 7-8 wins. Now, the schedule is difficult. It's always difficult, apparently, for Ole Miss. Someone didn't get the memo that your non-con game should be as easy as possible outside of the mandated one against tough competition. Ole Miss has a chance to finally regain its footing as a normal operating college football program. Michael Thompson had nothing to do with that. He was just the last remaining holdover in the administrative office from the NCAA mess. So Matt Luke is now the last holdover, and Derek Nix too. But really it's Matt Luke because Derek Nix is a running backs coach. What kind of influence does he really have? Matt Luke is the head football coach of the Ole Miss Rebels. So Matt Luke is now the most recognizable name face, but he still has ties. And he had nothing to do with Hugh Freeze and what went on. But people remember that, and they know that about you.
it's super unfair, and I really hate that this is even a discussion. They're starting to figure some things out. They're absolutely better. This team, if you weren't at the game on Saturday and you just watched the SEC Network broadcast, that broadcast team could not say enough about all of the good young talent on both sides of the ball for Ole Miss. And it was not just platitudes. I mean, they were legit compliments, and they were worthy of those compliments. And I think you really got to let him play it out. But just with everything else kind of around him, I don't know where this ends. I think the route that turns out well for Matt Luke is pretty narrow. It's not impossible to navigate that route, but I don't know that it's the most likely outcome either. So just kind of tough that this is where it's gone. But I think if you're Matt Luke, you look at Saturday and Kelly Bryant's not going to be 100%, and you got a team that's playing well, this is about as good of a free shot that you also have a chance to win as you're going to get, and you see where it goes. Because I think if they win Saturday, perception at least starts to kind of change, and you go from there. But we'll see how it goes. And obviously, a bad loss Saturday would really change some things just from perception standpoint, momentum and all that. But play well or steal a win, and I think this thing really gets interesting.
Going now to Kenshaw Lockett for the 40-yard dash. This is Talk of Champions. I'm Ben Garrett at Spirit Ben on Twitter. He's Ben at Hip. If you haven't already, subscribe, rate, review Talk of Champions in iTunes. Also available in SoundCloud and should be wherever you find your podcast. Just simply search Talk of Champions. If we're not in a particular spot, let me know at Spirit Ben. I'll make sure to take care of that for you. The 40-yard dash is brought to you by Impact by Ironwood. Business owners, did you know you can support Ole Miss Athletics every time you accept a debit or credit card payment? That's right. Impact by Ironwood offers the best debit and credit card payments processing tools around, and they'll donate a portion of their profits to the Ole Miss Athletics Foundation in your name. The best part, you don't have to spend an extra dime to get exclusive member benefits, earn donor priority points, and support your Ole Miss Rebels. To learn more, call 1-833-GO-TEAMS. That's 1-833-GO-TEAMS. Or go to www.impactolemiss.com. That's impactolemiss.com. Make a difference. Make an impact.
We're on three. 1, 2, 3.
Let's go.
The 40-yard dash with former Ole Miss defensive end Kentrell Lockett.
There he is. It's the big guy.
Brought to you by Impact by Ironwood.
It's the 40-yard dash brought to you by Impact by Ironwood. Former Ole Miss defensive end Kentrell Lockett joins me. Used to be the regular co-host of Talk of Champions. But life got in the way. And our friendship, I guess. Not really. Hey, buddy.
I don't like how you did that, right? You said not friendship. I'm like, wow. But it's all good, man. You ain't lying. Life happened. But I'm always here. I'm still here.
It's Missouri week. Ole Miss travels to Missouri. The last time, and you've touched on this briefly before on this podcast, Ole Miss traveled to Missouri. It did not end well. It's 34-7. You were a part of that game in 2006. Chase Daniel and Jeremy Maclin absolutely destroyed Ole Miss. Brent Schaefer had inarguably one of his worst games as an Ole Miss Rebel. You and I have talked at length about how Brent Schaefer could have been good in the modern college football landscape, but back then with Ed Orgeron and Dan Werner, it was like trying to fit a square peg into a round hole. He had 3 interceptions, only 90 yards passing. Woof. I forgot how bad that game was. I was there. I saw it. But to look back on it now, holy cow.
It was terrible. It was almost like they had our playbook. But I say this about Brent. Brent was ahead of his time, but I feel like our coaches was afraid to step outside of the box with this guy, man. What he would do in practice, he could do it in the game. Some of the spectacular things that he did do in the game, those were his own numbers he called, man. That wasn't the play that Coach Warner or anyone would give him. That was a Brent Schaefer. You know, that was just a change-up or something that he would do. That's just like how Masoli would. They would give Masoli a certain play and it wouldn't work, and Masoli would get on out of there. So that's what Brent did. But at a certain extent, they limited that man because they wanted Seth Adams to be our quarterback.
Which doesn't make any sense because the disparity in talent between Brent Schaefer and Seth Adams was obvious to anyone with a brain.
That's the difference between a touchdown with Mike Wallace and an 80-yard pass reception with Mike Wallace is the quarterback. Brent Schaefer, Mike Wallace had to run underneath that thing. Seth Adams, he had to kind of slow down and get a chance, and then the defender would have a chance to make a play on the ball. So with that alone, you know, we was putting a cap on our offense. How you put a cap on the offense when you got somebody like Mike Wallace that just blew the cap off the defenses, man? So we limited ourselves. Go all the way back to Georgia. We got out of Georgia quick, and that was Mike Wallace scored. And then they didn't go to it no more. I don't get it. I don't understand it. If the play worked one time, let it keep working until they prove me wrong or prove it wrong.
I grew up an Ole Miss fan. I don't run away from that. I went to Ole Miss in 2006. I'll never forget where I was on that day. Not 2006. I'm sorry. It might have been 2004 or 5 when Brent Schaefer and Kadarius Eason committed on the same day. And I was locked into the Ole Miss websites, the Ole Miss Spirit. I think at the time Rebel Grove was, oh gosh, rebelsports.net or something. I can't remember. But I had both of them pulled up. And immediately when it happened, there's Brent Schaefer. There's Kadarius Eason. And you thought, Ed Orgeron, he's for real. The chance that Robert Kiat took, he was right. It's all coming together. Because Brent Schaefer was a five-star, former Tennessee quarterback. This was the guy that was going to take over Ole Miss football and turn it around. But the fit for him, it just wasn't there for Ole Miss.
Man, everyone thought that. I believed it. When we all was there, you see Cordero, you see Derek Eason, you see Mr. 2000, Dexter McCluster, you see all the different people, and then you're trying to figure out where people go fit. You had Alan Walker coming in as a wide receiver. You're like, no, you're not a wide receiver. You had Kendrick Lewis came in as a wide receiver, end up turning safety. So it was a lot of people, a lot of puzzle pieces that had to really just fit in certain places. Marche was an athlete. Ended up at corner. Cassius came in as an athlete. Probably they tried him at running back, receiver, punt return. He ended up being corner. They gave certain people the attention they needed to get into the positions and to help the team. Brent Schaefer was that guy. We saw it. We anticipated it. We was like, okay, we got this guy coming in that can man the offense. It's not Seth Adams. It's not Robert Lane anymore. It was rejuvenating to us to know that we can light up the scoreboard with this type of guy. And we saw it in practice. But that's all it was in practice. They would use Brent Schaefer as in the practice dummy when we would be playing an opposing team that would have a quarterback that was such like him. I'm like, well, people doing the other thing for Brent, and he's not even playing. So I just didn't understand it. It's like they got him here to say we had a big class and didn't utilize him and then pushed him out. That could have been the difference in our story, man. If they would have put as much time and effort into Brent as much as they did to make Seth that quarterback, it would have been completely different. No bad blood, nothing against Seth. I'm just saying, you have a Michael Vick sitting on the sideline, and you got, I don't know who you can say that you got a who in front of him. Still, Michael Vick would trump anybody in this time. I would want Michael Vick as my quarterback. I didn't understand it. But that's one of the things, one of the mishaps that were going on while we were playing.
You recruited this guy. You signed this guy over a number of high-profile offers. Again, he's a five-star prospect, and it never felt like, from the outside looking in, that they gave him a true shot to win that job.
Period. Not at all. It was almost like they didn't want him to get the job. Even though I brought you here, I don't think you're right for it. Well, even if that was the case, they could have split time. The games that Brent Schaefer did play, started the game, there's a significant difference in the games. Imagine Brent Schaefer in the game and they're calling the lineup of plays that they have set for Seth Adams. Won't go over right. It'll be the same thing as making call play calls when Dexter McCluster is the running back compared to when Cordero Eason. You got to really make play calls that going to accommodate those guys, play a set of skills. There's no deep balls set in the script for Seth Adams, but Brent Schaefer going to throw the deep ball. But if you don't call him plays, there's no chance for him to let it go. You can run a direct snap with Brent and Dexter McCluster in the game. That's going to put the defense on the toes. But you run a direct snap with Seth Adams in the game, they know they're not about to throw the ball out there to the guy that run like Peyton Manning. We was eliminating ourselves. Certain things, it's like we think we were being smart, but we were real stupid at certain points in the game.
Well, back then, Dan Werner wasn't the coordinator he is now. He's the quarterback coach of South Carolina these days. But at Ole Miss even, he was running more RPO stuff, more spread it out, try to get it to your receivers quickly. Dan Werner opened up himself once he got back to Ole Miss. Back then, he was running Ken Dorsey Miami offense, and Brent Schaefer didn't fit that.
Not at all. And Ben Jarvis as the running back, which that run pass option didn't make no sense with Ben Jarvis as a running back. It would be good with Dexter, but with Ben Jarvis, he'll pop every other game and he'll get caught. But it worked for us sometimes. Sometimes it didn't, but we still don't run that play, that power, that veer. Oh, it didn't make no sense. Guard getting blown off the ball, guard not pulling, whatever it may be, man. It just was a lot of things they tried to force that didn't fall right.
Yeah, Brent would be so good in today's college football. Where is he now?
Ridiculous. I have no clue. Oh, I seen or heard of Brent Schaefer, when I went back to school and finished my degree, he was around and there then. But
I didn't see him again after that. He's saying he was getting his school. He was finished school and stuff like that. Because matter of fact, it was actually him and Brandon Jenkins was together finishing school and stuff. Random. That's a name for you, ain't it? And they were finishing school and stuff together. And he said he was going to go back to Florida. But that, man, that was years ago. That's what, like, maybe 14, 15.
We found our next project. Where in the world is Brent Schaefer? We got to find him.
You're right. We got to find him.
I'm looking at the highlights of the Missouri Ole Miss game in 2006. Before we get into some of this game, I see that at this time, y'all didn't have names on the back of the jerseys. This was when Ed Orgeron was just trying to make Ole Miss USC light. He went to LSU as head coach, totally changed his approach. They've got the names on their jerseys. He's being himself. He's got his own identity now, knows what he wants his Ed Orgeron program to be. But back then, at this point, Ed Orgeron was just trying to make Ole Miss into USC light. Y'all didn't like not having the names on the jerseys, right?
Not at all. Just the simple fact of, man, I've been playing ball all these years. It might be by chance that your Pop Warner League or your middle school or your high school may have your name on the back of your jersey. But now we playing primetime ball, college, Saturday, ESPN, ABC, CBS, whatever it may be. And everybody around the world watching this game and no name on the back of the jerseys. The name on the back of the jersey really didn't matter. It was, we had these black cleats, but he would put these ugly white shoestrings in it, which still didn't, that was terrible too. I'm like, man, you, no matter how good the cleat looked, you made it look terrible by putting these white shoestrings in it. Some of my family alone, they were like, man, they got a number 40 out there. It looked like Junior, but I don't know if that's him because they don't have the name on it. And my dad used to say all the time, man, after we got our name put back on the jersey, he was like, man, that just made me feel so proud. He said that my name is on TV because I'm a junior. So we had the same name. So he was like, it just made me feel so good and so proud. To us, we work hard, you know, and just the simple thing is getting the name on the back of the jersey. And then just the feeling that the parents may get to know, damn, look at my kid on TV and his name on TV. He representing for us. And a lot of people didn't get that, man. And that's just some of the little things. You know how excited we were just when those were one of the changes he made, Coach Nutt? And you know how excited we were just that he allowed us to pick our cleats, saying that you guys want blue cleats, you want red cleats. You can wear these or you can wear them. Old linemen, big guys, you know you got a weight requirement. You can't wear low top cleats, preferably high top or whatever. Or you got to wear the fat man cleats like I call them. I call them the Willie Rose. And we had a choice compared to wearing those other cleats like we were. It was, you wanted us to put our best foot forward, but it was almost prison compared to the next coaching regime. You have leeway, you have fun, and then you're gonna go to war for that person. The person could tell you anything, and really didn't get to a point about that actual person who was leading. It was about everybody else that was around us. We enjoyed each other. We felt on each other because we was afraid of the coaching staff, man, what was gonna go on.
Well, the problem with Ed back then is that he tried to control everything, but he was making a big jump up from defensive line coach at USC. Never been a coordinator before. Now he's a head coach. And rather than trust those who've been in those wars before, a Dan Werner, national championship winning offensive coordinator, or Art Kehoe, who had been one of the most decorated offensive line coaches in the history of college football, rather than trust those guys to do their jobs, Ed Orgeron had this hubris about him that he knew everything better than everyone else, and he tried to put his hands in every single thing, including the jerseys, and trying to make Ole Miss like USC. And you can't win that way.
The jerseys, the workouts, the Muscle Beach. There's no damn beach in Mississippi. Why are we doing Muscle Beach? You know what I'm saying? It was just they brought everything from California to here. You couldn't nurse an injury because they call it chicken or call it coward in USC. You can't be hurt. So there's a difference between injured and hurt. Well, coach, if Tim Mullins, if Ice and Stem Tim say, I can't practice today, what you want me to do? I'm supposed to say no to him? And then come Saturday when I really can't play, it's going to be worse. But then at the same time, coach, you don't think you ate into my injury here? We only did middle drill for 4 periods. You know, we only wore pads Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. Today is Friday. It's the whole approach was wrong. I think what he understood as a football team was just to be competitive, mean, and just hit you in the mouth football team. No X's and O's. We're not as serious on the X's and O's. Just let the players do that. Now he's to the point where he's real relaxing. He could let his players do that because they're going to flock to him because he's at LSU. I get what you're saying about the times, how the times have changed. You live and you learn. But I don't get, how is that okay? How was that at that point? That was right. And now I wonder if you look back on it and be like, man, I went at that all wrong. Because that team we had, bro, we could have did a lot of things because we did it. We just had different coaches.
That's what I'm looking at with this loss to Missouri. Y'all lose 34-7 to Missouri, but this was the same year that y'all were 4-8 with four losses by less than a touchdown to number 7 Auburn, number 9 LSU, number 10 Georgia, and Alabama. It was there. Yep.
I remember the Bama game. The Bama game, we actually lost on it was a freak play, that freak little trick toss that they did to Mark Ingram, going into our student section, probably on the 30-yard line. It was tackle over. They had three tackles on my side. And I was like, coach, I just lined up where I normally line up, in the 5, because the play didn't even come in. And it was tackle over and they scored. So you're right. We were close many a year. But it was just that last little bit at the end of the game that we didn't have. I guess we just didn't know how to win, man. Or maybe we just was tired. You know, you get to that home stretch, or that marathon runner ran this 50K. Now he had the starting line in his body giving up. He need an IV or something. It was always we were lagging and missing something. But we kind of got it together, too, the next year.
But that defense had so much talent. To fall behind 17-0 to Missouri, Marche scores the touchdown. You go into halftown 17-7 at Missouri. Y'all had a shot.
That defense, bro, that Tampa 2 defense, that Monty Kiffin defense, it works sometimes. And you got to make adjustments on the fly. You got to make adjustments on the field. You get the players a lot of responsibility. Now, if the players are not coached up and don't keep their eyes in the right place, understand the responsibility, you know, you're going to have weakness in the defense. And if somebody was hurt because of they were working out in Muscle Beach all week and now they sore or whatever. So that was a few weaknesses here. We had those players. We had the bodies, the P. Willis, Parade Jarris. We had everybody in place. Charles Clark, Nate Banks, you had the names of people, of everyone that could just be back there and play ball, you know, but it's just B. Brown. You know, you're saying all these names, these guys are coaches in the league now, you know. They had the talent. It was just to the point of, I wouldn't even say it was play calling. I don't know what it was, man, because let me tell you about some of that Tampa 2 defense. I used to watch them boys play that ball and didn't understand what they was doing. It was a lot of moving pieces. And then to get in college and be the Leo in the defense, you're like, man, that's a whole lot. So I get what Kirsch was doing. I get it a little bit. But then as soon as somebody moved, it changed your whole outlook on the play, your whole assignment and everything. And if you don't know it, oh, that's a dead play. That's a blown assignment. That's a touchdown. That's a gash. That happened to us a lot. And you was always missing somebody from somebody being hurt. So you was always plugging someone. So you always was a man down. You always was a man short. You always had a weak link. And that weak link will get exposed.
2006, was that the redshirt freshman year or the redshirt sophomore year for you?
That was the freshman year.
Because this was Patrick Willis's senior year. He was just honored, put into the College Football Hall of Fame. He was in Oxford this weekend trying to get him on Talk of Champions because he tops the list of dream Talk of Champions guests. I'm going to make it happen at some point. I don't know when. But what was your relationship like with Patrick? I forgot y'all played together for a brief period.
P. Willie was cool, man. He was quiet, but he talked to certain people. We would always run into each other in the same places. And he would smile and I would smile. I'd be like, you at it again, huh, boy? And he'd be like, yeah, man, you know how it go. But he was a cool guy, man. He was all about ball. He'd give you the shirt off his back. You know, he let me drive his truck around a few times. I remember we came back from, you know what? I think it was actually the Mizzou game, bro. They came back and they had then robbed his truck. And they took everything from out his vehicle. We had to came back from the game and they had to took everything from outside out of his truck. Remember, he had the speakers and all of that. You can hear him on campus before you even see him. But he was always a cool dude, man. He'll give you anything, food, anything. But he had it hard too, bro. He'll be hurt and he'll still go out there practicing trying to appease Coach O. The guy was all about ball, but, you know, he didn't know that you can say no. Man, coach, I'm hurt. Man, coach, I need a break. But he would never do it. It got to a point where his foot would be bothering him, and he'd still be practicing. Nah, P. Willie, bro, we know you know how to do this. You've been doing it for all the years. You're still showing us. Bro, just chill out. We need you on Saturday. Nah, man, you know how coach is. Yeah, we know how coach is. We know how coach going to be, too, when you can't play Saturday. Hell of a guy, though.
My story with Patrick Willis is his last game after the Egg Bowl, he's standing there with Stan Sandroni doing his post game. And that's when I worked in the sports information department. I go and put my recorder in front of his face just like I'm supposed to. Stan knew the deal. And Patrick is standing there and he's talking. And I had no clue he knew who I was. He'd never talked to me before. But he gets done. This is his last game. The post game wraps up. He says, thank you, Stan. He goes, Ben, good to see you. And I was shocked because I was a huge Patrick Willis mark. I just was. And everyone knew he was great, but that's who he was. Even if he didn't show it, because that's just not how he is, he retained information better than anyone. So if he knew my name, this little obscure student worker for Ole Miss Sports Information, he knew everything. And that's why he was a leader. He didn't have to say anything. He didn't have to speak up. And y'all knew, even with all the early makings of what would become back-to-back Cotton Bowl winning teams, that this was the best player on the field, even though he carried himself as if he was a student manager.
You would not know P. Willie was P. Willie, our number 49, Chucky Mullin. You know how I understood really the significance and like the how people look at you and view you by that Chucky Mullin's award was P. Willie. And then everyone to follow that, I was like, bro, yeah, that's some big shoes to fill. P. Willie won this. Coming in my freshman year, when he wore the patch, I'm like, damn, with the patch, I didn't get it. I'm like, man, what the hell are people wearing the patch for? And then when P. Willie got it, I'm like, damn, well, this the guy, this the example, this what you have to be like to get this award. And then everyone that followed after it, Jeremy Garrett, Jamarcus Sanford, Marcus Tillman, and people like that, all of those guys possessed those qualities. He was standard. He was pinnacle for what it was to be a Chucky Mullin's Courage Award winner. He embodied all those standards. And if you want to be up there and be a leader, it's like you had to be like P. Willie, but not P. Willie, be yourself. So we understood that. We saw what it was. We saw where it got him drafted.
We'll get right back to former Ole Miss defensive end Kentrell Lockett for the 40-yard dash after this brief word on the Lamar, Oxford's first and only traditional neighborhood, and Cheney's Pharmacy. What do we know about living in Oxford right now? One, it's expensive. And two, if you live on one side of town and you want to go to the other side of town, it takes an hour to get through traffic. We're all jammed, packed in like sardines in this town. But have no fear. The Lamar, Oxford's only traditional neighborhood, is under construction. Brought to you by John Welty Realty. A traditional neighborhood means right where you live. A grocery store, a brewery, restaurants, shops, all within walking distance of your front door. But what about the houses? Custom high-end spec houses. Beautiful finishes, open concept, modern two-story houses. If you're looking for a three-bedroom, a two-bedroom, a one-bedroom, you'll find a fit with any of these three spacious layouts. So don't delay. Get in with the Lamar right now. Build-out is happening. For more information, contact John Welty at john@johnweltyrealty.com. That's john@johnweltyrealty.com. Or give him a call at 662-23-HOMES. When it's football season, all you want to do is be around football. Even when you make your trip to the pharmacy, you want to see Ole Miss. The best pharmacy to go to, the only Ole Miss pharmacy really to go to, is Cheney's Pharmacy for all your pharmaceutical needs. Cheney's offers prescription synchronization, immunizations, compounding, a two-lane drive-thru, and available hours that ensure your needs are met on your own time. Cheney's also accepts all third-party insurance. It's a locally owned pharmacy that has been in Oxford over 40 years. Cheney's Pharmacy provides the best customer service out there. So give Cheney's a call, 662-234-7221. Or go visit them at 501 Bramlett Boulevard. That's right off of University Avenue. They're open 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. Monday through Saturday and 1 p.m. to 9 p.m. on Sundays. You can find them online, cheneyspharmacy.com. At Cheney's, Ole Miss is always in season. Cheney's Pharmacy, much more than just a pharmacy. Did Patrick Willis know he was great?
I think he knew he was great. I think he knew he was on the verge of greatness, too, when he was leaving. At the same time, what he had been through previously in his life and everything, it humbled the guy so much. Everything that he did from that point on was just a blessing. It was better than what I've been through before. So anything other than what he used to do was a plus. I ain't gonna say he knew he was great. I'll say he knew he was blessed. Because when the guy would come around you, man, you could be in a bad mood. His smile will make you smile. He'll say something funny. And let me tell you something. He's going to give you advice, and he's going to tell you about yourself, really, without you even noticing, and be like, nah, you know you shouldn't be doing that for it, or whatever it may be. That was just the type of guy he was.
He carried himself in a way that you knew he was great, and it was intimidating, but he didn't treat you that way.
He wasn't too busy for a photo op. He wasn't too busy for a picture. Never too big to take a moment. Never too big to, man, you need a ride? That showed you just a genuine heart of people. There were people on the team. I could tell you one person, Joshua Sheen, we would leave practice, we'll go to the dorm, be going in the same places. It'll be raining.
it'll be whatever. It's cold, 30 degrees. Josh Sheen will pass you. Walking to the dorm in his car and they'll blow the horn at you. Oh, man, I'll see you when we get there. I'm like, bro, what type of stuff that is? And then you got somebody like Pete Willie. Hey, man, y'all need a ride. I'm pull up and pick you up. I'm like, you got this guy. Pete Willie about to be drafted first round. He got Josh Sheen. I'm like, bro, you know, so it just shows. It just speaks for the guy character, man. I ain't talking bad about Josh. I'm just saying, Josh, I could have got that ride that night, bro. I could have got that ride,
bro. So what's the challenge in going to Columbia and facing Missouri? It's a different place. It doesn't feel like the SEC.
No, it doesn't. First off, once you get out there, everything is pretty. Depending on if it's cold when you play out there, it's kind of warm when we play. But the stadium is dope. The crowd can get loud. What kept my attention the whole time, it's like their end zone. I don't know which end zone they may be, but it's like a hill. And they have stuff painted on it, have rocks. And then they got fans and stuff there. You know, just be sitting there. It was distracting me. Maybe it was my ADHD, but I just kept looking, like trying to see what was going on. It always felt like somebody was just right at my shoulders. It's a hostile environment. But, you know, with anything, when you're traveling out of town, you got to get used to the climate, used to everything, early game, late game. You know, some certain things you got to adjust to. If you're ready and prepared, any stadium should be just the next stadium. You take care of your business. You go in, you go out. Hopefully it's with a W.
You see an improving football team, don't you?
Definitely. You see confidence more than anything. You see plays now that they're actually executing compared to the first games of the season. You're seeing run-throughs now with tackles compared to just arm tackles or road tackles, whatever. If people want the contact, they actually going to the mesh point. When you hit the mesh point, that means the ball going to pop eventually. So just keep going hard and the ball going to bounce in your favor. You see players buying into what their coach is actually saying, you know, and believing and embracing it, that if you're in his A gap, nobody can run in his A gap. If you cover this B gap, that's a tackle for you. Or if you blitz right here, I guarantee you that's a sack. If you read right here and then you look over top, look the safety off, that's a touchdown. You know, and you're really starting to believe that. Because if a coach tell you that and then you listen to it and do it in the game and you get that sack or you get that touchdown or you get that interception, yeah, man, coach is right. They believe what they're saying, putting it on paper, and then applying it to the field. You see they're building. They're building to something. You can see that definitely.
They're 3-3. You're wanting to get to a bowl game. It reminds me a lot when y'all were trying to figure out the path to a bowl. You lost some games you shouldn't have lost. You had to win one that you weren't expected to win. Maybe you argue the at Arkansas game when Houston Nutt returned to Arkansas. That was the catalyst that led to y'all winning out and going to the Cotton Bowl. I'm not saying Ole Miss can do that, but if you look down the schedule, Texas A&M at home, maybe at Missouri, you're not going to beat Auburn. You're not going to beat LSU. The Egg Bowl. You're going to have to get one or two of these games in order to get over that hump and learn how to win. And that's something that you and I talked about. Learning how to win is tough. You're going to have to get some breaks along the way. But the first thing you got to have is the right attitude and temperament. And I'm starting to see, like you mentioned, confidence that wasn't there. Now, whether that results in them getting more wins than losses, that remains to be seen. But at least they're starting to get the first part of the formula put together, just like y'all did. Once y'all got that confidence, got some breaks, beat Arkansas, they aren't as talented as y'all were, but they do have the pieces in which to get to a bowl game should things fall right and they figure that part of it out. Just getting that success, getting that taste of it, because that taste is addictive.
It definitely is. When you get the taste of winning, that's all you want. A celebrated locker room is the best feeling in the world after you've been defeated for two previous Saturdays. They may not have the talent as much as we had, but they play hard. You can see they're playing hard because they're trying to do something. They're trying to make a name for themselves, you know. And they have the original Landshark back there, man. That says a lot. So there's a certain headspace you got to be first off to play that defense. That confidence, man, that confidence trump all. And that confidence, it creates a eraser. We could have a bad series or they can score. But that's just, they just score the next series. Well, let us score the next series. You know, why not? Why we can't score? Coach used to challenge us like that all the time. Like, let's go 3-and-out, man. Let's go 3-and-out. I challenge you to go 3-and-out. If you don't go 3-and-out, just let's get off the field. Hold them to 3 points. Not let them get in the end zone. We used to pride ourselves on that. I remember those first few years with Coach Nutt, the goal line stance we used to have. No matter what would happen throughout the field, throughout the course of, you know, them traveling up and down the field, once they got to that goal line, we knew It was a certain level of competition, and it was big man on big man. My grass versus your grass. If I'm on your land, I win. If you on my land, I win. If I get knocked off the ball, that's touchdown in the red zone. We used to look forward to stuff like that, but why do you have to wait to get to the goal line that you got to batten down and won't get serious? So it all starts just from going one play at a time. If I mess up this play, well, I'll make it right the next play. And just if you're taking one play at a time, it'll be straight. That's just like with offense. I look at offense, I used to think it was bigger than what it was, but it's real simple. You got four downs to get 10 yards, preferably one and then three. Every possession is special. It's just supposed to be a positive play. I ain't trying to go for the big ball all the time. I just need to get these every 10 yards. Every 10 yards, maybe even get 20 here. And then you go get in the end zone. It's simple to me. So if you just look at it and break it down one play at a time, it should all flow like that. As a coach, I wouldn't want to look at second down, third down, and then possibly going at it on first, on the fourth. Okay, first down, I need to give me about like 7 yards. If I don't give me 7 yards, I'm going to give me about five. All right, so now at second and five, I know what I can and can't run because of what I'm in. It's simple, bro. It's simple. It's just simple. I just can't wait to see where they go from here.
Last thing, do you feel old yet? Chase Daniel is starting for the Bears with Mitch Trubisky hurt. He's old now. Jeremy Maclin's been out of the league for a little while now. Ben Jarvis well out of the league. Bobby Massey and Brad both in year eight, I think, in the league. All the guys you played with or against, they're getting up there in years. They're the veterans of the NFL. Man, you got to start feeling it. You're feeling your age yet? It's your birthday as we record this. Happy birthday to 40. You feel it yet?
I've been feeling it, but it's good to know that I'm still here. I'm still healthy. May have a few ailments here from ball, but when I talk about ball, people be like, man, that was so long ago. I'm like, no. I played ball in college when it really started taking off. The names you know, the Joe Haydens, the Tim Tebows, and the Pounceys, and all of those names, Von Millers. I'm like, that was my era, like when football was changing. And if you won't go beyond that, the names you can say, that's those are old to me. I'll be the old head to these guys all any and every day because they need guidance. I swear the pass rush moves they're doing now, I wish I would have knew them then, but it's one thing to do the move, but you got to come out of your stance and all the stance, hips, and all of that. So Danielson always think he got one up on Mr. Miyagi, but Mr. Miyagi ain't going to work hard, but going to get the job done twice as fast.
The most fun, and Kentrell and I have been friends for a long time, but the most fun I've had with Kentrell, we'd been drinking. We were in Atlanta to go to Denzel Kim Dichie's art gala. Rob did the whole slam poetry against his dad with his dad standing right there. But before this, we pre-gamed it. We got there too early. Me, Kentrell, and my friend Kratz pre-gamed it at this Asian karaoke bar. We all got pretty hammered. And I'm in the parking lot, and I'm a former offensive lineman in high school. Not a good one at all. But I just wanted to see what it was like to try to block a former SEC, all-SEC defensive end. I think you did, not necessarily a swim move, but you did this thing where you caught me with your right hand and then pushed me away with your left.
The dumpster, the garbage truck gone.
Yeah.
Gonna grab you right at the wrist.
And it felt like, honest to God, it felt like somebody shot a gun into my arm and just poof. I got in your way enough to say that I got in your way, but it took you 2 seconds to get by me, if that.
Now, just imagine somebody like James Carpenter punching you on the other side of the ball. And that's what I'm trying to avoid. My whole way of thinking when I play football, you're bigger than me, you're stronger than me, but I'm sure I'm quicker than you. So I'm going to use that to my advantage. I'm going to hit you first. Probably hit him in the chest. Or like Coach Rock said, check the oar. The hands is the only thing you got in this fight. I can't kick you. So I got to use my hands.
The funniest part of that is I imagine somebody driving down the road and looking into this parking lot and seeing this short, out of shape white dude, completely out of shape, trying to block this still athletic, tall, big defensive end.
You got good feet. You got good feet, but the hand got to follow. When the feet dead, when the hand dead, the feet dead.
Yeah.
You beat the hand, you beat the man.
I used to just cut people because they were better than me.
So you the offensive lineman that I hate.
Yeah.
I'll end up, tell you what happened. The type of offensive lineman you are, I wouldn't make no plays the game. You know what I'll be doing? I'll be after you the whole game. I'll just trying to make your life miserable. I'll be cutting you. I'll be talking to you. You wouldn't be able to do your blocks because me and you, we wrestling. Somebody go get a 15-yard penalty today.
Yeah.
Both of us.
Yeah. He's Kentrell Lockett, former Ole Miss defensive end for the 40-yard dash brought to you by Impact by Ironwood. Love you, buddy. Thanks for coming on again. We'll do it again.
Love you too, bro. Enjoy your evening. R.I.P., Phyllis.
That was Kentrell Lockett, former Ole Miss defensive end, for the 40-yard dash brought to you by Impact by Ironwood. This is Talk of Champions. I'm Ben Garrett at Spirit Ben on Twitter. He's Bennett Hip at Bennett Hip in the guest co-host chair. Talk of Champions is powered by BNA Bank.
Reason number 12 to bank at BNA. We are the bank for Northeast Mississippi. We have one home, Northeast Mississippi. Seeing this local Northeast Mississippi economy thrive and helping the people of our area with their borrowing needs is our only focus. From buying a home to starting your own business, we are the team of local lenders standing ready to make your dreams a reality. BNA Bank. We are the bank of Northeast Mississippi. Member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
That was Kentrell Lockett, former Ole Miss defensive end, for the 40-yard dash. The 40-yard dash brought to you by Impact by Ironwood. Didn't talk too much about the game this weekend. Ole Miss and Missouri. Ole Miss 11.5-point dogs. Welcome now back in Bennett Hip at Bennett Hip on Twitter in the guest co-host chair. What do you make of this game?
I think the line's probably a little too big, and I don't really buy that Kelly Bryant can be 100% right now. And maybe he is, and I hope he is. He's a great kid by all accounts. Everyone around here from Clemson and all that say he's just a great dude and a great person. So I saw that play on Saturday where he took the cheap shot and it was just really tough to watch. So I hope he's healthy. I hope he's good to go. But just that would seem like a pretty quick turnaround. So I think if you're Ole Miss, I want to see what happens with the quarterbacks. I want to see if Matt Corral is inserted at all or if it's just the John Rice Plumlee show. And if it is, how does that run game work against a better team than Vanderbilt, a better defense than Vanderbilt? I don't know that it obviously won't be quite as efficient as it was last Saturday, but if it can be 85, 90%, you got a shot. So I want to see how the run game travels. And obviously, if Kelly Bryant's not 100%, Ole Miss has a little opening there to kind of get into that game.
Ole Miss is getting its first test since it completely overhauled its offensive philosophy and became a run-dominant team. This team is tough against the run. I think third overall in total defense. They lost their leading tackler to injury. But we're going to see what John Rice Plumlee can be as a passer. But it's not just on him. David Johnson and I talked about this in the mailbag on Tuesday. The wide receivers have to find a way to get separation. Miles Battle has been a disappointment. DeMarcus Gregory, disappointment. The only two you can rely on, and Jonathan Mingo is hit or miss, and Elijah Moore. Elijah Moore is the only known commodity. Can those wide receivers find something? And I don't know if that's going to be the case or not, but Missouri's going to test that. Can you efficiently throw the football? You don't have to throw it 30 times, but you have to be able to run the ball competently again, as you did against Alabama in the loss, but also open it up a little bit more offensively. That includes throwing the ball on first down. Ole Miss hadn't done that very much.
This is where you got to find a middle ground. That game against Vanderbilt was great for them from a confidence standpoint, and you had all the rushing yards and all the backs got involved, and it was fun to watch, and those guys are really good. Missouri is 11th in the country in yards per carry allowed, 2.76 yards per carry. They just don't give up much on the ground, so you're going to have to throw the football. And that doesn't mean you turn into Texas Tech air raid, but it does mean that you've got to get into situations where you put Plumlee in spots where they can convert third and fives, third and fours, and they've got to throw down the field. Elijah Moore is very good. Jonathan Mingo is emerging, but two receivers is not enough. Those guys have to step up, and Plumlee has to make some better throws. That pass to Jaden Jackson, I guess the third quarter, was really good, but we didn't see a whole lot of throws of that quality. He's got to be better throwing the ball, placing the ball. That's why I'm kind of intrigued if we see just Plumlee, if it's Corral and Plumlee. Corral right now gives you the best chance to throw the football. Plumlee, obviously, very good in the run offense. So if both those guys are healthy, and we'll see on Matt, I would love to see how they balance those against a Missouri team that's hard to run against. So it's kind of fascinating, but I think if you're Ole Miss, this is a free shot, but one that you're in the game. Missouri is not an uber-talented Auburn, Alabama, LSU kind of team. They're probably better than Ole Miss, but with a not less than 100% quarterback, who knows?
I know Ole Miss defensively has been competitive. Kelly Bryant's going to be a step up, certainly, from their last couple of opponents.
Absolutely.
I think Ole Miss offensively needs to open up things more in the screen game. Jerrion Ealy is built for that. If I told you or asked you, tell me the top four offensive playmakers outside of quarterback for Ole Miss, three of them would be running backs. And only one of those, Jerrion Ealy, has the ability to be dynamic catching the football. So being a better screen team, a more active screen team, could help John Rice Plumlee open it up in the passing game. You have to be able to throw it.
I like to see the screen game. I'd like to see, even if you just put Ealy in the slot as a receiver and just make him a security blanket on passing plays, you're going to have a hard time covering Jaren Ealy in space, whether it's with a linebacker or a safety or whoever. That's the guy that really can become kind of a jack of all spades and just put him everywhere and just let him get the ball. So whatever you got to do to get the ball in his hands is what I would do. The number of touches they've gotten him is just kind of criminally low. And I understand that they've got a lot of mouths to feed in that backfield and all that, but he's got to touch the ball more. He's too good to have the touches that he's had so far.
I love Jerrion Ealy as a player. I just think it could be so much more than four touches like you got against Vanderbilt. And that comes back to play calling. It's not just John Rhys Plumlee. That he has to be aided by Rich Rodriguez to trust him to make decisions in the short passing game, intermediate passing game, and not just rely on quick hitches and slants. I'm not saying open it up by bombing away. You're not going to have Chad Kelly back there. But there are ways to get more actively involved in the passing game, which goes beyond John Rhys Plumlee just throwing it further.
It's manufacturing touches for your guys. If you're looking at the passing game, you want to get the ball in Elijah Moore's hands. You want to get the ball in Jaren Ealy's hands. You feel pretty good about Mingo now. We've seen some flashes from Cooley in the tight end. So you have some playmakers there. I think the question is, if you are Ole Miss and you're Rich Rodriguez, you got to sit down with Plumlee and kind of figure out, what is he comfortable with? What kind of throws can he not make? The stuff that he's not comfortable with or he can't execute that throw right now, toss it out. And whatever works, you got to disguise it. You got to put it in whatever formation you can do it. And you just got to execute. And you've got to take those chances and say, well, he said he's good with this. We're going to try it. Because as great as that Vanderbilt game was, you just can't win consistently in this league just running the ball over and over and over. I think balance is overrated. But you have to be a threat in the passing game enough to open up the running game and to do that. So they've really got to sit down and figure out what he's comfortable with and then figure out a way to kind of make all that stuff happen.
I don't think they would have been so run dominant against Vanderbilt if they didn't have to be.
You would have been stupid to really throw more, honestly. The way that they were running the football with whatever running back was in the game and then with Plumlee himself, it didn't really make more sense at all to throw the football and take it out of the ground. But I think going forward, you've got to figure out the best of that running game and pair it with some passing stuff, whether it's quick hitters or screen game or whatever, and just try and find a way to move the football through the air just enough to allow that running game to play. And it seems like Ole Miss is, from an offensive line standpoint, those guys are blocking up really well in the run game. And now it's going to be, what can they do in pass blocking to allow everything to work? So I'm kind of fascinated by Saturday and what the offense looks like as it continues to evolve, because it can't look like what it did Saturday, as great as it was. It's got to be more versatile, a little bit more of a dual threat. But that running game obviously is going to be the basis of it no matter what.
What's the path to six wins? I asked this to David Johnson because it was a mailbag question. What do you see as the path?
The path is you win one of these next two, whether it's at Missouri or it's Texas A&M at home, a Texas A&M team that is good, but not by any means the kind of power that we thought they would be when the season started. And then that gets you to four. You beat New Mexico State, that's five. And I think you take your shot at the Egg Bowl, and that's how you get six. Still one of these next two, beat New Mexico State, and try and figure out a way to win the Egg Bowl against a Mississippi State team that is kind of in flux right now. I'm not sure about the quarterback situation. The defense is clearly not as good as they were a year ago. So that's the formula for me. But without stealing one of these next two, it becomes really just impossibly tough.
Got to win one of the next two. Have to. You're going to beat New Mexico. Got to beat one of these next two. You're not beating LSU. You're not beating Auburn. It's a tough hill.
No, the talent is just too much. And Auburn's defense is so good. And I know Bo Nix has been up and down and struggled against Florida. But he's talented, and LSU is – Joe Burrow is fantastic, and that's just not a – I don't think that's anything close to a winnable game. So it's definitely find a way to beat Missouri or find a way to beat A&M, and then the Egg Bowl becomes very important for both teams. I like Joe Moorhead as a coach. I like a lot of his offensive stuff at Penn State, but it just seems to be – not working is probably too strong of a phrase, but it just kind of seems kind of clunky right now. It seems that they haven't really gotten in motion, so – I think that's a winnable game for Ole Miss. I don't think they'll be the favorite. Obviously, they're on the road and that kind of stuff. But that's a winnable football game. So that's the path, I think. It's there, but man, is it narrow.
All right, so every time Bennett's on the Thursday show of Talk of Champions, the Thursday edition, I ask him what he's most looking forward to this weekend at Ole Miss Sports. What are you most watching closely looking forward to in Ole Miss Sports?
I do want to see this game on Saturday. I just want to see what the offense looks like and how it evolves. And I think Missouri is good. I don't think they're great, but I think they're clearly better than Ole Miss. But if Kelly Bryant's not 100%, I think this becomes a game where Ole Miss has a shot. Outside of that, nothing really this weekend, but the next few weeks, I want to see where basketball recruiting kind of progresses. They had a rough week on the trail last week, and now it's going to be, who do they prioritize for 2020? Do they take some time and wait till the late period and figure things out? So that's kind of what I'm looking at outside of football. But other than that, I think this game in Missouri is pretty intriguing, and I'm all in terms of entertainment at the very least.
Ole Miss wins if what happens?
I think they win if they can run the football and if Kelly Bryant's not 100%. If Ole Miss can run the football and at a pretty high level and kind of control the clock, control the tempo, control time of possession, have some explosive plays, I think this is a winnable game for them. But I think if they can't run the ball against a very good Missouri defense, it just seems like there's not really a way for them to do it. But you run the football, you play some decent defense, you get a couple of turnovers, that's the formula. I think it's possible, but that Missouri defense is very, very good.
Who has to be good for Ole Miss to win? Real quick, before that answer from Bennett, let me tell you about Grove Sharks tailgating and Alan Samuels Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram of Oxford. Two more proud sponsors of Talk of Champions. Ole Miss football is back at home, and that means great food, friends, and fun in the Grove. Let the experts at Grove Sharks tailgating take care of all your needs before the party begins and the Rebels kick off at Vaught-Hemingway Stadium. Grove Sharks still has a few packages left for the weekend or the remainder of the season. They can provide tents, chairs, coolers, and TV accommodations, among many different items. Visit Grove Sharks at GroveSharks.com or like them on Facebook at Grove Sharks Tailgating. You can also reach Grove Sharks owner Eric Trimble at 662-816-3493. That's 662-816-3493. If you're in the market for a new car, there is no better time to buy at Alan Samuels Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram of Oxford. Not only do they now have in stock the 2020 Jeep Gladiator, which is half Wrangler, half truck, it's the perfect car for me, but also 20% off select Ram trucks. And I know, no one really loves the car buying process. I'm with you. It can be overwhelming. You're just looking for the best deal. Well, Alan Samuels Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram of Oxford is here for you. And what separates Alan Samuels Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram of Oxford is Brian and Mason and the rest of the staff aim to address each of your needs with the utmost respect, care, and attention to detail. Tell them Talk of Champions sent you. Maybe that'll help when you buy that 2020 Jeep Gladiator, that 4x4 truck you've been looking for. 20% off right now. Select Ram trucks. Contact them today at 662-234-8000. You can stop by and see them at 2201 East University Avenue in Oxford. That's just past Kroger. Alan Samuels, let's be friends.
Plumlee's got to be good. I think you've got to have a big game from Scotty Phillips. You got to have a big game from Jaren Ealy. And I think really this is the first real test for this offensive line that started to show improvement. I think those guys really, the priority is there to really step up and against a pretty quality front in Missouri who always have good pass rushers. And so I think really the offensive line is going to be a big focus on Saturday. Those guys have been better, but they haven't faced anyone like Missouri in quite a while in a winnable game. So I think that's kind of where I'm leaning right now.
If one player surprises and is instrumental in Ole Miss beating Missouri, who is he?
It's an interesting question. I keep waiting for teams to kind of shut down Elijah Moore. It's really hard to do. It's hard to shut down guys as good as he is. But I think if there's someone that makes a play for them that's not Elijah Moore, I think it's Jonathan Mingo. And I think that's the guy that if Ole Miss is going to have success in the passing game, Missouri is obviously going to try and take away Elijah Moore. Mingo continuing to progress, continuing to make plays. That's the guy that has a couple big plays, maybe scores a touchdown. That's how you win a football game. It's guys like that stepping up.
Yeah, DeAndre Prince is my guy.
He's been very good. Looked very good. Doesn't look like a freshman. Doesn't look like he's intimidated. Doesn't look like he has kind of deer in the headlights. He knows what he's doing. Very athletic. And I've been very impressed with so many of this freshman class. So that's a good choice as well.
I said it to a staffer over the weekend. This 2019 freshman class is going to be the class that saved Ole Miss.
You look at the program, they just needed a base level. When you're trying to rebuild things, you got to have some building blocks. And I think they have a lot of those guys in this 2019 class that can become multi-year contributors. And you got some guys that look like all SEC level talents. And so I think you're spot on there, whether it's Matt Luke or whoever down the road, this class, when you're kind of talking about what Ole Miss is 2 or 3 years down the road, they're going to be a very big part of what this turnaround looks like.
All right, before we get out of here, sorry to end it on this note, but I'm a Braves fan and I'm mourning. Is Snit fired after this debacle?
I don't think so. That would seem very drastic, and it's just I think they'll make changes on the coaching staff. I think Ron Washington gets a manager job. He's too good to do what he's doing in Atlanta. I wouldn't be shocked if Walt Weiss wasn't back. I would just be surprised. Back-to-back NL East titles, you can totally justify making the move. I would just be surprised. That would be out of character for them, for better or worse.
Send him off into retirement. Celebrate him. Pay him. Let him go. And promote Wash.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting discussion. Just I don't know how much longer he wants to do this. He's been around, he's what, 40-something years in the organization. Not a young guy, but he obviously still loves the game. And from a player standpoint, he's a very good managing the clubhouse player manager. Now, the tactics and all that, not a strong suit. So I think you do have to have the conversation of what are you thinking from a longevity standpoint? Because if it's something where he says, well, maybe I've got a year or two left, I think you really have to look at that point, looking at Wash or whoever and saying, well, we have this guy now. Let's go ahead and make a move and send you off on a high note in general. But obviously, if he says, hey, I feel good, I'm going to do 5-6 years, whatever, I think they probably roll it over. But Ron Washington and his kind of – there's so many managerial openings and his reputation as a manager, you're going to have to have a conversation there and figure out what you want to do.
Oh, boy. Where does this rank for you as far as toughest losses you've had to endure?
It's better than losing like 3-2 on a walk-off in the ninth. But this was just – the Braves are the better team here. They've played the better series for basically the entire series. 20 minutes in, have the game be done, I think it has to be pretty far up there just in terms of pure disappointment. This team has been really fun, definitely the funnest since 2013, maybe the funnest since before that. I really like this group of guys, group of players, but this ending really just mars so much of that and just kind of hard to overlook at this point.
Yeah, this one wrecked me. I can only remember one other time in my life that a loss just absolutely destroyed me. And I expected it. I knew it was coming. I knew they were going to lose. And I should be thankful that they lost in the way that they did so that the mourning process, the grieving process, could be quick and easy. But the longer I dwell on it, the worse it gets. It reminds me of when Ole Miss lost to Valpo. I was 10 years old. I mourned. I cried like a baby. Now my job is Ole Miss. It's not the same. I don't deal with Ole Miss the same anymore.
Yeah.
But back then, little Ben could not take that loss at all. The second loss would have to be when Tony Romo fumbled the snap on the field goal against the Seahawks. I thought that was a Super Bowl team. The third loss would be when Dez was ruled to have not caught the ball at Green Bay. That was a catch. DeMarco Murray fumbled that ball, and that turned the game completely. But Dez not being given a catch when he caught it killed me. This one feels different, and I'll tell you why before we get out of here. I'm sorry. You're grieving with me in real time. Sports will never be the same to me again.
I think it's tough because on one hand, this team is very good and capable of doing much more than getting knocked out in the division series. On the other hand, I think if you're trying to find a positive, is just the core of this team is so young. And you look at overall, you look at the performances of Acuna and Albies and Mike Soroka, and Dansby Swanson's been so good this series. There are very clear ways to get excited about the future and kind of what's to come. But this feels like a very massively missed chance, especially this game hadn't happened yet, but the Dodgers are on the ropes and the Braves know that they're a better team than the Nationals. So if it's somehow Cardinals Nationals, I think the Braves even more so than they are right now will be absolutely kicking themselves because they know that they're the better team and there's a clear path to the World Series there. So it's definitely tough, and it's going to take some time to kind of put it into perspective and kind of recover from it. And I think you'll have a lot of fans that, for better or worse, this fan base was bought in. I think the get-in price for Wednesday's game was over $100 just for standing room only. So this fan base had bought in, and for this kind of result, I think you're going to have some people that are going to be pretty skeptical from now on come playoff time. It'll be a little bit like Ole Miss and regionals and stuff. I think those are very similar kind of fan-based feelings right now.
If you're looking for a great Christmas gift for that Braves fan in your life, I am selling my Chipper Jones game use signed bat. It'll be on eBay unless you hit me up on Twitter at Spirit Ben. I'm selling my Bobby Cox signed picture where he's arguing with an umpire. I think it's in the World Series. I'd have to check. I'm selling that. I don't think anyone wants to buy my Jason Hayward signed jersey that's framed, but those two things are about to go up for auction unless you make me a good offer at SpiritBen on Twitter. I can't do it anymore. Not that I'm giving up my fandom. I just can't surround myself with my sports anymore, with my sports.
Right. You can't have the visual reminders.
I'm wrecked by this. I need to be surrounded by pictures of my kids. That's what makes me happy. This does not make me happy. Why would I intentionally and purposefully?
Yeah, it's one of those things where we all love sports, but at some point, like, you also have to do stuff that makes you happy. And at some point, you realize that for the majority of the time, sports are not that avenue or that outlet. So we're both just giving everybody else the therapy session today. But, you know, it's one of those things, like we said, when you kind of invest as much as you have to for to be a Major League Baseball fan and what that entails from just a pure amount of game standpoint and attention and all that, stuff like this really just knock you down a peg or two.
It's been Talk of Champions. I'm Ben Garrett at SpiritBen on Twitter. He's Ben at Hip, at Ben at Hip. My thanks to Kentrell Lockett, former Ole Miss defensive end, for the 40-yard dash brought to you by Impact by Ironwood. If you haven't already, subscribe, review Talk of Champions in iTunes. Leave a 5-star review. Also available in SoundCloud. Just simply search Talk of Champions and should be wherever you can get a podcast. If we're not in a particular spot, let me know at SpiritBen. I'll take care of it. Thank you, Ben, and I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Anytime, man.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Granger understands that you go to great lengths and sometimes heights to ensure the power is always flowing, which is why you can count on Granger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRANGER, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs to help you conquer your goals, only at Smoothie King.